All right, start again.
All right. So I'm Greg DiLoreto, Chair of the Westland Transportation Advisory Board. Evan, introduce yourself. Might be muted. Yes, you're muted. Carl, you want to introduce yourself?
By text while he gets his audio working.
Yeah, he's got it. Yeah, Carl, why don't you introduce yourself? You're muted now.
Sure. My name's Carl Turner. I live on Imperial Drive. And yeah, this is my second meeting with the Transportation Board.
Okay. In your room, Lance, go ahead, mute yourself.
I'll start. Lance Calvert, Public Works Director, City Engineer and Liaison to the TAB.
Okay, next to you.
This Mitch Faith, member, I think I'm going on my seventh year here, and I reside in the Savannah Oaks neighborhood.
Okay, and across from you?
Jeff Krug, this is my first meeting. I live on Rosemont Road up, pretty close to the Shannon Lane, Rosemont Road intersection right up there. So not too far from here.
Jeff, how do you spell your last name?
Krug, K-R-U-G. You want a quick background?
Sure.
So I'm retired from the Port of Portland was my last job as Director of Operations for the Marine side. And so we, in that role, we did a lot of dock maintenance, facility maintenance, pavement, security, the whole works as far as big marine terminal facility maintenance. I served on a number of different state, city, and industry boards. And really, one of the last things that I was really focused on at the port was kicking off a whole new safety program for the port. So it was really some gratifying and rewarding results that we saw from a real leadership-focused safety program. So that was pretty cool. I'm retired. I got some time and showed some interest, so here I am. And looking forward to working with you all.
Sure, Jim, you worked with my good friend Tom Peterson there at the port.
Did you sign up?
No. No, I'm sorry, Greg.
I said you worked with my good friend Tom Peterson there at the port.
Yeah, I know Tom well.
I was just hitting up about Joe Molesky. Kathy Molesky's husband has just left or retired or whatever from the port.
Oh, did he really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. They're still here in Westland?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for everyone that was able to make it tonight. I myself here am down in Arizona at spring baseball training, so.
What position? What are you training for?
Yeah, right. Yeah, my position is sitting in the outfield watching the game. That's it.
It's snowing at your house, Graham.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I know.
Buddy, I just want to check my audio. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're loud and clear.
Perfect.
Okay, listening all the people, it looks like we don't have any public here tonight, Lance, for public comment.
Nope.
Okay, then the first order of business is to nominate and elect a new chair and a vice chair of our organization. So nominations are open for the chair of the TAB.
One backup real quick, Greg, is a review and approval of December 22nd.
Oh, you're right. I apologize. You're right. Sorry.
So move.
A second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay. Sorry. Thanks, Lance. So anxious to get a new chair that I skipped right over. I have served as 2 years as your chair, so I am no longer eligible to do so at least for at least the next year. So we need We have someone nominate as chair of the organization. I'll open the floor for nominations. Speak at once.
I do like how Greg slid in that he's done his 2 years and is no longer eligible.
Yeah, I can't do it for another year. I mean, legally, the council says 2 years max. So that's
Greg. I may get everybody since there's no buddy rushing to raise their hand. Maybe give everybody a sort of heads up of what's included as the chair and what.
Sure. It's a pretty tough job, so you got to think long and hard about it. Actually, all the chair really does is required is to run our meetings. Also prepares an annual report to the city council, which is pretty easy to do. And you can look at the ones that I've done in the past. They've got a template that you use from the meetings that we've had to prepare our report to the city council. I'm still on the committee. I think I am. I got a letter saying I'm back on. So I'm happy to help whoever takes the chair do it, but it's pretty straightforward. So run the meetings. And then I also, which you don't have to do this, I would get the emails from Metro for the Transportation Policy Advisory Committee. And I would sometimes sit in on those meetings, but you don't have to do that. That's just if you wanted to. So it's pretty straightforward. Just run our meetings. And then once a year, do that report to the city council.
I want to make a statement. So last 2021, I was the vice chair and Greg had nominated me to become chair. I declined on the basis I thought Greg was doing such a great job that I didn't want to see him go. But now that he's announced that he's going to step down, I'm just offering, I am now available and willing to serve in that role if
he's okay. I hear that's a nomination. Do we have any other nominations?
I don't know. I wasn't really trying to nominate myself.
I'm just so Greg nominated you.
You're it.
Campaign pitch before the campaign began.
All right. Well, I'm not hearing a whole lot of movement for another nomination. So, if there aren't any, let's all vote. All in favor of Rich being the chair for 2023, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay, how about vice chair? How about a nomination for vice chair? Good chance to learn how the committee works and maybe step into the chair's position in the following year. Any nominations for vice chair or volunteer?
Kevin to continue in that capacity. He did such an admirable job last year. Let's keep him on.
Okay. Any other nominations? So that was Carl, right? Is that right, Rich?
What was that?
Who was it you nominated?
Evan. Evan is our vice chair, correct?
Evan. Okay. Sorry. Sorry, Evan.
Or vice chair?
No, I'm sorry. Who, isn't.
Who was vice chair last year?
Now I really goofed it up. So Kevin is not at this meeting. Well, then I'll stick with my nomination of Evan, I guess.
Guess what, Evan? You've been nominated for.
Oh, he isn't even a member?
I don't think so. I think he's.
Oh, so well, that reaffirms that it's Evan is my choice.
I'm fine with that. My only concern with chair was travel for work and missing meetings. So being a backup is no issue.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. All in favor of Evan being the vice chair, please say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. All right. Congratulations to our new officers. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to the new chair, Rich.
Thank you, Greg. All right. So let's see. Moving on under business, the second item under business is a reminder about the citizen advisory training on September 27th. Lance, do you want to enlighten us on that?
Yeah, so everybody should have gotten an email or some notification from city staff about the upcoming citizen advisory training. And I would note that Mary has arrived at the meeting, so thank you, Mary, for being here. Be aware, mark that on your calendar. It's good training. There's also, I think, a requirement that you acknowledge, trying to look it up in here in my emails that,
Yeah, they sent us a note today saying we need the RSVP by the 27th, and they need an RSVP, so they have room.
And also, chair and vice chair information. I'll be, after this meeting, letting, admin know who chair and vice chair is so that they can, document that. But yeah, certainly recommend the CAG training, on the 27th. Or citizen advisory board training, sorry.
And Lance, this isn't, I mean, this is offered every year to new board members. I attended it when I first came on back, so there's really nothing new or different that necessitates me attend a second time, is there?
Not that I am aware of, but, you know, always good for a refresher. If, you know, I think the main thing is being aware, particularly for new members, of roles and responsibilities of being on a citizen advisory board, and, particularly as it relates to elections and, public, statements where, I'm really cutting it brief and would recommend the training, but you know, certain things like, how you represent your individual preferences versus representing the board, and being clear in that so that nobody mistakes, opinion of an individual versus something that was voted and approved by the committee. And so just, you know, a lot of details like that, yeah, where it's a good refresher and reminder for folks.
Thank you.
Could I add something, please?
Yes, go ahead, Mary.
Thank you. I'm sorry I was late. I was on I-205. That was fun. I did want to give a plug for attending the training because I have attended several, and they do cover sometimes different information. So I would actually, I mean, I know it's not the highlight of anyone's day, but I would encourage people to attend. I can't say what the program will be this year, but there are some important things, and there are some important things that we can actually, as a public body, make mistakes out of unintentionally. So having done it myself, speaking from experience, thank you.
Yeah, I did find my info here. The meeting is also available virtually. So you don't have to be in attendance. You can just attend virtually. I think the big thing is that they are asking the members read and somehow sign or respond that you've read the ordinance 1704, which I think goes over, Mary may know that better than me, but goes over details of meetings and stuff, possibly. So that's it for reminders on that.
Thank you.
All right. Why does that run usually?
Mary, do you know?
I don't. I'm going to recall from memory an hour and a half at the most.
Okay. Travel for work again. Deciding if I want to try and call in from the East Coast.
Oh, I mean, you can probably glean what you need from information that's provided.
From the org.
Yeah, so.
Okay, anything further on that topic? Then we'll move on to discussion of the roundabout policy. This is a continuation from our last meeting. We were briefed on roundabouts. So I'm not.
Right, I'll start.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as noted in the last meeting notes, there is roundabout policies brought forward, as well as Kittleson making a presentation prior meeting, I think. Kittleson did make a presentation to city council as well, built on the same presentation information that was presented to the Transportation Advisory Board. I don't know, and Mary, feel free to chime in here, but I don't know if there is any definitive direction given to staff on details about roundabout policies. I think it's more informational. There's a lot of different options, of course, that the city can pursue on roundabout policies. As anybody new may not know, we are pursuing roundabout installations at 10th Street and Willamette Falls Drive. We're looking at installing another roundabout, just the same as 10th and Willamette, at the near the Tualatin River and Fields Bridge Park in the new middle school, the new 80 Creek Middle School site. And also future plans in the works, construction right now ongoing for the ODOT 43 on ramp to I-205 with a roundabout there. Plans in the future for a roundabout in our transportation system plan. Concept drawings for 43 and Willamette Falls Drive, as well as plans for a potential roundabout at the 10th Street and I-205 northbound ramp on and off ramp. So all things that are in the works. I think the general question is, should the city have a general policy of roundabouts first, or certain style or kind of roundabouts? What makes sense for the West Lynn? Those are sort of the things that I guess are up in the air. For direction, like I said, Mary, feel free to step in if there's anything that I'm missing here.
Greg has a question.
Yeah, not so much a question, but a position. As I've said before, I'm an unabashed fan of roundabouts. And so we received a couple of policies from one from Bend and one from Clackamas County. And maybe we don't need them because you're doing them just about everywhere. But the Bend one basically said, we'll consider roundabouts first before we do a traffic signal. And granted, our city's nowhere near the size of Bend, nor do we have the kind of roads, the number of arterials, et cetera, that they have. But I think as a policy decision, I frankly would like to see that and see the council adopt that. It would provide guidance, not only for the staff, but also for the community, that we're going to consider roundabouts before we do traffic signals. And so I had mentioned that before as at least something I wanted us to consider. I don't know. Mary, maybe the council says no, and they may, but it seems to me it helps us to have. It also provides cover for staff that keeps doing roundabouts. I mean, that we've adopted it as a policy.
Yes. Yes, I thank you for that comment, because that's actually basically what I said at the meeting after the presentation. And we didn't adopt any policy or move forward on anything, but I agree with all of that. I believe that I have heard from some people who are following closely, especially the placement of the roundabout by Fields Bridge. There is specific concern with that placement. So that brings out maybe the question of, are there standards? Do we need to have them for maybe not whether or not to have roundabouts in our road system, but how they're sited and what's the criteria? That's, I think, maybe what people are looking for. But just from listening to comments from people, that's what I'm hearing more concern about, not that we have a roundabout. period, because I do believe they are a vast improvement. I've never seen one. I've actually never seen a failed roundabout. Is there such a thing? That would be an interesting, I mean, why do they fail? What makes them fail would be, I don't know if we want to have this conversation now, but I'd be curious.
Yeah, traffic volumes get too high. And in fact, the one at Rosemont and Stafford was supposed to be, talking to the county, a dual lane one, but they didn't have the money at the time. So they decided to go ahead and put it in, but they're talking about making it, I believe, four lanes like the one in Borland is. So they can fail, but we don't have the volumes yet to do that. And so,
okay. Yeah. I guess I have seen a backup there sometimes.
And I guess I would say to that extent, I want to be careful when we quote, put design standards and policies, because an engineer has to design these things. And so we want to be careful that we're not, since we're not engineers, even though I am one, that's not what I, that we're not telling the engineering staff, this is what you have to do. So we want some general guidelines about them, and we can let the staff develop those for us, but we ought to have the policy. And the Bend one seems pretty good, just in my humble opinion. I thought it was a pretty decent one. I guess I'd look to Lance to get guidance as to what they thought from a staff perspective, a recommendation from them as well.
Well, I thought at the December meeting we discussed this, and you know, Lance, your staff brought kind of the policies that existed out there. Was there one from like Milwaukee or Gladstone as well?
I didn't see one from those. I'd be surprised if they had one, but I didn't see one.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you guys were going to look into that a little bit more and dig into the policies and then kind of come back with what you found. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, I think the staff, the direction that Public Works staff received was to get in front of the city council with a presentation similar to what we made to the TAB and have the opportunity for council and get feedback from them as well, before we really, you know, put too much staff time into that effort. Sounds like it's pretty consistent across the board, so we can start working on, you know, recommendations and making some suggestions for the next TAB meeting to review those. I would say, I would tell you, you know, that there's two ways really for roundabouts to fail. And Greg had mentioned, you can have an overload of traffic at the intersection that just, you know, causes backups, which is certainly, you know, excessive delay is not, you know, necessarily a good thing. So that's when you have to expand the roundabout. I have, on the flip side of that, seen, particularly actually in Phoenix, roundabouts fail catastrophically. And that is traditionally at where there's very tight spacing with other intersections or with traffic signals. And catastrophic failure of a roundabout usually means the traffic is backing up into the roundabout and that nobody can get out of the roundabout. So like at Rosemont and Stafford, there's a lot of traffic, but people can get out. And so the traffic is flowing just slowly. A catastrophic failure would be traffic backing up into the roundabout to where no direction of travel can travel because there's people parked sitting in the circle of the roundabout trying to get to their leg of the intersection that's blocked by traffic that can't get out. So my fear in West Lynn of a catastrophic roundabout failure is actually the one that ODOT's building at Highway 43 and I-205 because of backups from the Arch Bridge into downtown Oregon City. So in downtown Oregon City, you have a traffic signal on the other side of the on the other side of the bridge, and ODOT will have to monitor that traffic signal in particular to make sure that they're clearing that queue to get traffic to not back up into the roundabout at 43 and the on-ramp, because if it does,
it will mean that nobody can move in any direction. And then you have to send out police to, you know, to basically clear those and clear those backups. And if just the public, like at that point, really hates roundabouts because nobody can go anywhere and do anything, including emergency services. So that is really, I think, the one situation where you want to be really good at your roundabout design and managing the surrounding network to make sure that you're not creating that kind of situation. And so that's actually a big comment that we had to ODOT about that roundabout, and particularly with tolling, because we have already seen their projections for increased diversion. So the question becomes, if you know, through tolling all of downtown Oregon City is gridlocked, then that gridlock could expand out into across the Arch Bridge into the I-205/43 interchange, and theoretically even back up traffic onto I-205 itself, because nobody can get off at 43 where the toll gantry is. So those become real interesting conversations quite quickly when you're looking at modeling data and all the engineering that goes into that, and making sure that you don't unintentionally create a big problem. As far as our own citywide policy, I'm a big fan of roundabouts because of their safety aspects, and the city's already adopted in the TSP a sort of vision zero community effort of nobody dies is our goal on the road, and roundabouts help that immensely versus a traffic signal in typical traffic signal fashion. Now, there are, Greg mentioned, certain situations where some may be useful and some may be not. Grade has a lot to do with that. So I think we could come up with something, draft something. Most likely I'm envisioning putting it into the public work standards, and council can direct staff to update the public work standards to reflect that kind of policy change or shift. And then eventually, when we do an update to the transportation system plan again, we could even write that into the TSP as a long range planning document. That's at least where my head is. I don't know if anybody else has any other suggestions, but certainly work on that.
So to that end, Rich and Lance, do we need anything to direct the staff to go ahead and start working on this policy and bring it back so we can get it to the council? Do we need a motion or something, or are you good just with what we talked about?
No motion, I think, necessary, since this is mainly a discussion item. I think we've got staff and myself have the direction we need to start working on preparing that, particularly after hearing from the city council. So we'll start working on that and hopefully have something at our next meeting.
I have a follow up. Mary, I understand you to say that Hiddleston has already made the presentation to the city council on roundabouts, or there was just discussion that took place in absence of a full presentation?
It was on the February 9th meeting, I believe. Is that correct, date wise? The memo is dated the 6th, but I think the meeting was on the 9th.
Yeah, I think in our minutes, I think we were planning on an April presentation, but that got accelerated into February by direction of council and the city manager.
Yeah, it's in the February 6th meeting. If you go to that meeting, you can look it up and see the agenda, and you can link to the presentation right there.
Yeah, I guess interested or concerned about the fact that we were going to flesh out this policy a little more at this meeting in anticipation of the presentation by Hiddleston in April. But if that presentation has already occurred, I'm just concerned that, you know, our timing is off, or, you know, we missed our window of opportunity. And it sounds as if what I'm hearing from Lance is, no, we can still come back and look at a draft of something that staff will do and bring that forward as a recommendation in the future, correct?
Yes, feel free to chime in again, Mary, that I think there was some, like you said, related to the school project and other projects going on, some interest from the community about roundabouts. And so I think that's why John directed us to go ahead and have that presentation in February, sort of accelerate that on the council schedule.
I had not heard the reason behind putting it on in the February calendar, actually, so I'm not sure. I confess that I did not recall it had been given a date of April. I do want to say one quick thing before I cede the floor to Greg. I'm very interested. I'm glad you brought up roundabouts backing up, because that's another reason, and I haven't really heard it voiced by more people than just myself, but maybe more people are concerned about it. The one at Fields Bridge, because of the school parent pickup traffic feeding into it, in addition to kind of the first end of the afternoon rush hour diversion traffic, all of those elements. I think that roundabout has the potential of getting jammed up and sticking, and that roadway, and then you've got the traffic backing onto a constrained area, which is the bridge, and then emergency vehicles potentially trying to get through there. I mean, that would be the perfect storm. Obviously, that won't maybe happen all the time, but we have to plan for the worst case scenario, I hope. So is there a way to get data on, you know, how many cars do we think are going to be lined up there on an afternoon? I mean, I have driven by Athey Creek in its current Borland Road location and seen a backup of cars that is the length of that driveway, which is, I don't know how long, but it is really long, that driveway into the school from Borland Road. And the cars were actually out onto Borland Road. So I don't know technically how many cars were in that lineup, but it certainly would be enough to back up into this new roundabout from kind of my mental math that I can do.
Yeah, I can, that's a good observation. I can have, I'll get with John Williams, but we could probably get a count at the current Athey Creek site and see how many they get in their drop-off pickup line, compare that to the distance and length of the proposed drop-off and pickup. You know, as hopefully everybody here is aware, you know, like, there was a traffic impact analysis prepared for that facility that recommended that I can never remember the name of that little cul-de-sac that's the end of road there.
Brandon Place?
Brandon Place, thank you. The Brandon Place was supposed to connect. And connect over to Dollar, and then at the last minute the decision was made to close that even without having any traffic impact analysis or follow-up at the plan commission level to justify warranting that closure. So we're following the direction of the decision makers, but that decision could have an inadvertent consequence of generating that kind of issue. So I think it would be good to review that and look at it against real world data from the existing Athey Creek site to see, you know, if that's a potential issue. Yeah, I think that's right on point. And we can certainly do a double check on that. Bring that back to this group at our next meeting.
Thank you.
So the question is, as a new member trying to, I missed the roundabout discussion, but the variables that go into a roundabout are traffic flow, right? The cost to build it compared to a signal, right? Is that part of what a policy would look like?
Traditionally, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, cost is always a factor.
Sure. And so what other variables would you be or would we be writing into a general, are we trying to do a general policy for the city, or are we attacking a site by site?
I think
roundabout.
General policy, so like Greg mentioned, look at roundabouts first before looking at a traffic signal or in conjunction with a traffic signal, or as an alternative to a traffic signal. So those are the sort of the nuances, because they are inherently more safe.
Sure. So it's a cost benefit thing.
So it's a cost benefit, and but there are also geometric considerations. If you have buildings that are very close to the intersection, then a roundabout may not work, because you'd have to remove part of an existing building to fit the roundabout. Also on very steep slopes, which we do have in West Lynn, that may not work either, because of the turning movements of semi trucks. So if you have a steep sloped intersection, like at Salamo and 10th Street, if you actually walk that, you'll realize how steep that is.
I just
every person's driving it,
right?
And that kind of situation, you would have to figure out, like, how do we turn that, and then also the proximity to the other traffic signal, you know, how that works. So there are both, I would say, geometric factors as well as fiscal factors, as well as safety factors that all come into play. A lot of places default automatically to a traffic signal, and so they don't even look at roundabout, when a roundabout may be a great option.
Right. So that's kind of the goal of our policy, to really upgrade that. Okay.
Yeah. And now we can get into design details.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Okay, so that will come back again at our next meeting for further discussion. And we are, Lance, you expect we might have just a draft of what that policy might look like?
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay, anything further before we move on? All right, next item is a discussion on sidewalk prioritization within the city.
So we added this one largely because, as Greg may know, updates to our community development code mandated requirements for clear and objective standards. And Greg, feel free to chime in at any point, but basically the direction and future land use and development is that when a development is required to install, when a development is potentially required to install a sidewalk, if the development is within a quarter mile of an existing sidewalk, then it would be the expectation that that new development go ahead and install a sidewalk, so that eventually you can close that gap and have new sidewalk on a street that may not currently have sidewalk. So, you know, sort of think of, I don't know, examples, but like Highway 43, if a new development were to occur on Highway 43 and it's within a quarter mile of an existing sidewalk, then that new development would build out that sidewalk along Highway 43, and eventually new development or city funds would be used to close that gap and work to build out sidewalk infrastructure. If a new development is more than a quarter mile away from that any existing sidewalk, then that development could have the developer option of paying a fee in lieu of installing the actual sidewalk improvements. So and I think that's what was settled on. Am I correct in that, Greg?
Yeah, you are. Actually, Lance, and the rest of the committee, help me if I remember this. This actually came about because we had a conversation about Oregon City that puts money into sidewalks that are broken up. And the question came, I think, Rich, you brought it up. But the question came then, and it was really a question to you, Lance. And I don't believe this to be the case, but is it a higher priority that you take money out of your street fund to help incentivize people to start installing sidewalks or to fix sidewalks where the trees have uprooted the side? And I go on my walk and I see it all over the city. I wonder if I don't trip. And so to incentivize that, which is what Oregon City's doing. And so we had the conversation and we wanted you to weigh in as the keeper of the street budget. To whether or not, I think they put $200,000 into their incentive program in Oregon City to encourage people to get the sidewalks fixed in front of their houses where the trees have uprooted them or whatever. And so we said, well, let's send it back to Lance and see how he would rate this relative to the limited budget he has in transportation. Would this be a higher or a lower priority? Isn't that right, Rich? Is that the conversation we had?
My memory goes back even farther, several years ago when this was first brought before us, and it was about the requirement of half street improvements for any new development, including additions to a house in an older neighborhood that doesn't have sidewalks. And the policy was if you're doing these upgrades or whatever to that lot, then you must put a sidewalk as part of these half street improvements. And a lot of neighborhoods didn't feel that was appropriate or necessary. And so that's when we were first, I guess, introduced to this topic. And I think over the span of time since then, it's probably taken on, you know, different colors and textures than when it started. So that's how I recall the genesis of this discussion.
And so to build on that, I think both are correct, right? And you know, funding and fiscal priority is always, you know, I think a bigger general topic of, you know, we have a limited number of dollars from our street fees that we collect on our utility bills. Should that money be going to you know, pavement maintenance and road improvements, or should it be going to should a portion, as Oregon City is doing, go to help fund sidewalk maintenance, which is sort of another topic.
But
one of the reasons I wanted to put this on there is sort of tying all this together is, you know, as the, you know, Rich and Greg might recall, we did talk a lot about creating a map of where we would not want sidewalks, and so staff was contemplating this, particularly in light of the CDC changes and code changes, because even with the current policy, we could see where people may not be entirely thrilled with where the code is. It's much more clear and objective than the prior interpretation, but still not maybe getting to where we want to be. And so what staff's idea was is coming to the TAB and saying, well, what if we, you know, worked on as staff a map of everywhere we have sidewalks, and we can do a GIS map of that. And then once we have that map, we could work on where do we want sidewalks, and where would we not want sidewalks? And so, you know, in my prior life in another place, even in new developments, we would only require sidewalks on one side of a cul-de-sac, for example. And so even in a new subdivision, only one side of a cul-de-sac would have a sidewalk because, you know, the community there didn't think that it's necessary on a low volume, low speed location like cul-de-sac to have sidewalk on both sides of the street. And so what they did was created a policy saying, well, developer, you're only required to put in sidewalk on one side, and then the other side, you're required to pay a fee in lieu of constructing that sidewalk which would then go into a dedicated sidewalk fund to either build new sidewalks or maintain existing sidewalks. And so if you had a map of everywhere in town, you know, because we don't have a huge number of new subdivisions with new streets, unless, you know, there's a change in city limits somehow. So really the question becomes more for West Lynn, a question of redevelopment and saying, okay, if the single family lot is now going to be a fourplex, which is allowed now in code, should we require that to build a sidewalk there, or should we allow them to pay a fee in lieu, or should we mandate that they pay a fee? Because right now the code doesn't mandate that they pay a fee in lieu. It just says there's an option for a fee in lieu. And if you make the fee in lieu too high, you know, then odds are they'll build the sidewalk, even if it's in a location that you might not necessarily want it. But if you make the fee in lieu too low, then they're always going to default to paying the fee instead of installing the improvements. And just in general, I think staff understands, and we're trying to communicate to everybody that, you know, it always costs the city more to build a sidewalk than it costs the private developer. No matter what, no matter where it is, the city will always, it will always cost us more than a private developer, because remember, we have to pay prevailing wage. They don't. We have to oversee that. They have their own oversight. We have staff to go out and look at. They have their own, you know, staff. We have to pay to rebuild things. If they're in a new development, they're building everything new, so they don't necessarily have those expenses. We have to pay temporary construction easements to be on private property to regrade people's yard to match the new sidewalk. And so, you know, the developer doesn't have to pay himself to regrade his private yard. And so it always costs the city more. So if you collect a fee in lieu with the expectation that that fee in lieu will build that piece of sidewalk later, that is a false expectation. The fee in lieu, no matter how high you make it, really, is only going to pay for a portion of that sidewalk to ever be built by the city, because the city will always have a higher expense than the developer. So like if you're thinking Highway 43, it gets really complicated, because if one parcel is developing on Highway 43 and it's, you know, 50 feet long, then that sidewalk goes in and it's halfway out into the shoulder to match our plans for 43, then you really, you know, you probably don't want that sidewalk going in at the time of development. But if you collect a fee in lieu and then the city comes back later to build it, it's going to take the fee in lieu plus some additional revenue from somewhere, most likely tax dollars, to build that. So in general, you know, the thought was, well, what if we got to a level to where we could identify what we have in inventory, identify where we want sidewalks, and then come up with this concept of, you know, how to pay a fee in lieu, and where it's appropriate and how much.
And Lance, just to interrupt you there, is there also a bucket of money within the city to pay for sidewalk upgrades that are needed to link some missing gaps there in the name of safety, let's say, for instance?
Yes.
Is there?
So we do collect motor fuel tax revenue, as well as our street fee revenue. Those funds fund three primary things. One is city staff, snow plowing operations, pavement maintenance, sign maintenance, my salary. The second thing that they fund is street maintenance. So those funds fund resurfacing of streets, Anything of that nature. And then the last thing that those funds would pay for is capital improvements, like building new sidewalks, building new infrastructure, matching grants, matching bonds.
Yeah.
We just opened bids. I don't know if this is, I can mention this now, but we just opened bids for our road program today for this year. And so your street fees are paying for all that, which is all pavement maintenance. But next week, we're opening bids for the 10th Street Salamo work, which will build the roundabout at Willamette Falls Drive and 10th Street, build new sidewalk and bike and ped infrastructure along 10th to 8th, and then build the new multi-use path from Salamo and 10th and Blankenship all the way up to Barrington and resurface the street there. So combination of new plus maintenance that's being funded. That project's actually being funded for multiple sources, where it's both new capital from the street fund, as well as SDC revenue from developer contributions, as well as bond funds from the 2018 bond award, as well as some utility funds for stormwater improvements and water adjustments and stuff like that. So so we use all those different funds to try and build, come to get coalesce money to build projects that are priority to the city.
Yeah.
So if I may, Lance, if I understood then what you're saying, primary purpose of this agenda item is you are asking the TAB if the approach that staff wants to take of a map showing an inventory of where sidewalks now are and where they are not, and then coming to some decision about where we would want sidewalks in the future, that you're seeking our feedback about that approach and whether we want to tackle this at the next meeting or sometime in the future.
Yeah, and so exactly. So what we're saying is, should staff be working on sidewalk mapping and prioritization, or should we stick with the existing policy of within a quarter mile and keep it simple and utilize staff time somewhere else? I think the reason we're bringing it forward is because we know that it's always seems to be a discussion point, particularly in neighborhoods that are maybe don't have that level of infrastructure, but are seeing a lot of redevelopment. And so, you've got people that like the way it is, and then you've got people that want change. For example, down in Willamette, this week we had a lady that was really, I don't know if she came to the last meeting or not, but she was really passionate about getting sidewalks on 19th Street, where she just recently moved, just north of Dollar, and particularly with the new middle school coming in. But there's just no funding for that, and it's not really a priority location compared to the Safe Routes to School locations. And then, while it may be very passionate and something she firmly believes in, she's relatively new to the neighborhood. We asked her, well, talk to your neighbors and see if they have the same interest, because we also know there's other people on that street that are very much opposed to sidewalks, don't want the maintenance, don't want the responsibility, like it the way it is, live there for a long time in that neighborhood with that kind of aesthetic. And so it gets really personal.
Yeah. So may I, the current quarter mile policy that you mentioned, is that something that was endorsed by city council? Is this something that came out of discussions with the city council, or is this something that staff?
It came from the House Bill 2001 work that we did.
Oh.
So it has been, if that document's been approved by the council, then it was all part of that 2001 House Bill work that we did. You had to have clear and concise language for development. So that was the third piece of the three pieces we worked on. So it has been adopted. We have that as our standard. And I guess from my, if I might, since I got the floor, from my perspective, I certainly wouldn't want to put sidewalks over our pavement maintenance. And we, the committee in the past anyway, has tried to get our pavement condition maintenance rating up from a 60, which I think it's at, to at least an 80, which I think we also took to the city council. I think to answer your question, Jim, we don't have a separate pot of money for sidewalk improvements. I mean, it's competing with everything else in that street fund, and there's not enough money in there to do everything that we really need to do in the city. And I've argued in the past that unfortunately we spent quite a bit of that money on new projects. I've lived in this city for almost 40 years. And when that street fund was put into effect, it was to do pavement maintenance. But over time, it's now gone into new projects and other things. And you can watch the deterioration of our streets. And so as one member, for me, the highest priority has been street maintenance over really anything else, taking care of what we've already paid for. But I realize there are opportunities we just can't afford to pass up. Like when Metro gives us $3.5 million and we got to match it, you can't afford to pass those kind of things up. When the school district does half the street, you can't afford not to pass those up. Just realize they take away from the other things that our street maintenance, our street fund is supposed to go for. And so, relative to this, I wouldn't put street sidewalks higher than pavement maintenance, frankly.
Yes, Greg, but where do you stand with respect to Lance's proposal to bring a map?
Well, you know, I think that's a great idea, but I want you to think about this. And Rich, you are a city planner, so you know this full well. We go through and put this map together, we're going to have a very, very, very long and needful public involvement process. Because as Lance has already pointed out, some people want them and some people don't. So we put the map together and we decided to take it to the city council, not without an in-depth public involvement process about an acceptance from the public as to where we're going to require sidewalks or where we're going to put them in. It becomes, I think, an extremely long and involved project, which is why we got back to the thing about the incentivizing people by giving them some money to fix their sidewalks. It doesn't correct where they don't exist, but it certainly corrects the ones that have been broken and uprooted because of trees, etc.
Others, how do you feel about what Lance is proposing here? What else?
The idea of being targeted, but it's a good point that it then invokes a very large public process, which is positive. It makes sense to do that, to make decisions like this. The thing that pops into my mind is a question of last mile micromobility type things, and that if we're going to look at where do we want sidewalks, I feel like it almost becomes like, well, where do we want to be able to really enable that type of transportation of people on scooters, people on electric bikes, people on, you know, anything that's electric with wheels, or, you know, that they're going to be popping around on more. And how does that fit into our transportation plan? And that's a lot to bite off. I think that's a bigger discussion than just this. So it's kind of a can of worms, but that's kind of the question that comes into my mind about, like, well, if we're making targeted decisions about where we want sidewalks, I would probably advocate that we want to be making targeted decisions about where do we want to, you know, really allow, encourage, maybe there's some different language that's more correct for that, about, you know, people popping on electric scooters and going wherever they want to go.
Yeah, but, and certainly just for some clarification, it wasn't our intent to have this available for the next meeting. It was something that would be probably a goal for this next upcoming fiscal biennium as we start to prioritize our time for the next 2 years and our efforts. And really as a goal to not so much focus on where we want sidewalks, but where we don't want sidewalks. If we have consensus around where we don't want sidewalks, then maybe that gives us an opportunity to create a fee or a program where we could tell a developer, hey, it's not your choice. You don't get to pick if you put the sidewalks in or not. We don't want you to put the sidewalks in. We want you to pay a fee in lieu and then start feeding a separate sidewalk fund so that we could start generating revenue for filling in gaps or, you know, putting effort into those priority locations and not taking away from the maintenance funds. So I think that was sort of, more or less the targeted goal, much more so than saying, hey, we're going to build this sidewalk on this street next year, this sidewalk on this street 3 years later.
I just see some real gaps from where sidewalks end and where they do not connect to the next, you know, logical point and set of sidewalks and streets in the city, and it puts people, you know, walking on the shoulder of a road through somebody's front yard almost in certain areas, right? So, and there's no new development that's going to happen there anytime soon. So what's going to trigger a sidewalk upgrade in that case if we don't kind of look at it from a little bit different perspective, like you mentioned? That's my, and I realize there's a lot of other issues, and maybe some of those are already in the plan to be fixed, but I see some again that I see kids walking where I don't like it. Right on the side of Rosemont Road, walking on where there's no sidewalk.
And that's, you know, capital project prioritization and fiscal planning is really the heart of that.
Yep.
The way I see it is, I don't see any harm in having a map prepared that we can look at. We don't necessarily have to make a commitment at this point to, you know, putting our heads on the chopping block, so to speak, about any particular recommendation with respect to that. But I think it would be very informative to see that map, and maybe certain things will stand out, or at least to us seem pretty obvious that we can give our approval to, knowing that, yes, if this is going to become something that's going to have to be adopted in some formal way, that certainly I think the council would want some public input. And at that point, you know, that could be turned over to staff to conduct such a public process. But I think that there's a lot to be gained by taking a look at a map like this. It's a starting point, nothing else. And if we feel that it's just too big a monster to take on, then we'll just say, thank you very much for the information, but we just don't want to touch this.
Any guesstimate on staff time to put something like that together?
Well, it would take some GIS staff time to develop our map of existing inventory. And we don't really have a perfect inventory. We have some. So I would say certainly some time there. And then once I think we have a map of our existing assets, which is a goal that we have internally anyway, is knowing everything we have and where it is. Then we could come back to this group, share that information, and maybe continue the conversation there.
Doesn't the TSP already have a map of sidewalks in the city?
It does identify sidewalks and gaps on all of our arterials and collectors, but I don't think it necessarily goes down to each local.
Okay, so with that, what is the pleasure or desire of the board to in terms of our direction to staff on this matter?
I could support your position of putting the map together, if that's all we do now, and look at it.
Take a look at it and see where we go from there. Okay.
I can agree.
Anyone have any objections to that? I wasn't going to necessarily put up for a motion, but if there's a consensus, no one is opposed to that idea. I would take it as consensus of the group that we would direct staff to bring us a map showing the sidewalks of the city and where those gaps are, and we'll look at it and decide accordingly where we want to go with that. Okay? Agreement. All right, you have it. There you have it, Lance.
Thank you.
Right. Next on the agenda is the general capital project update. That's usually you.
Yep. So like I mentioned earlier, we did just have a bid opening for our annual road program, pavement resurfacing project. We got three bids, which is great, and came in under our engineer's estimate. So that'll be going to council for award the March 13th. Is it? I can't remember the March meeting of council. Next week, we open bids for the 10th Street corridor project, which I call it 10th Street Phase One. It's actually labeled something different, but I think it makes more sense to call it 10th Street Phase One. It's really 10th Street from Willamette Falls Drive to 8th, as well as the, like I said, Salama Road improvements from 10th all the way up to Barrington. Like I said, will be bid opening next week. I'm hoping to get the same good outcomes that we got today on our bids. Everything is more expensive. We already knew that going into this project. And so everything is considerably more expensive.
How tight are the bids?
Bids were very tight. We had estimated 2.6 million for this year's road program, and bids were hovering right around 2.3 million. All three bidders, Granite, S2, and Knife River. I think Knife River was a little better. We've got another, like I said, 10th Street. There's a couple of different contractors looking at it because it's a little different animal. Our road program this year is mostly mill and overlay. And so that'll look good because it'll look like we're doing a lot. And 10th Street is actually the more expensive project. People don't realize how long Salamo is from Barrington down to 10th. But it will be a great bike and ped connection once it's completed. Also give us better access and circulation around 10th Street. We're also currently working on right-of-way acquisition. For anybody that doesn't know, the roundabout, the properties that front Willamette Falls Drive, right at the intersection with 10th Street, they will have a new alleyway constructed on the backside of their lots because they will not have a driveway access anymore to Willamette Falls Drive because of the elimination of that little frontage road there and the construction of the roundabout. So we've been working on property acquisition for the thing very successfully so far. Knock on wood. The other project that's not going so great is the Highway 43 Hidden Springs, Cedar Oak, and Merrillhurst intersection project. That's the grant project. We got a Metro grant as well as state grants that are federal grants, actually, for those improvements. That's been languishing in design at ODOT for over 6 years, I think. Of course, costs keep escalating. So we continue to work with ODOT to try and get to some resolve there. We're also in negotiation, not super great negotiation, I will say, with the adjacent property owner of the church. With Old River and connecting Old River in accordance with the transportation system plan. Luke Borland, who's our new communication staff member in Public Works, did attend the Robinwood Neighborhood Association meeting last night. And they had a lot of diverse opinions about that project and what they prefer. So we're continuing to work on that effort and working through those details, both with the issues around right-of-way acquisition as well as issues with ODOT and their design details on the project. We are currently working on ways to reduce cost. ODOT adds a ton of cost to a project. Basically, anything that ODOT does now costs 3 times more than what it costs us. And it's quite staggering how they approach a project. Almost systemic in their organization is the way I would characterize it. And I've actually let them know that, that they should really be either changing the way they policy projects, in particular arterial design projects. Now, the OTC is, you know, short of coming out and stating it as a formal policy, the OTC has made it crystal clear, the Oregon Transportation Commission, that their priority is limited access freeways. And the last thing on their prioritization list is the arterial, urban and suburban arterial streets that they own and operate. Anybody that drives around Portland metro area can probably visually see that as well as feel it when they're driving around on those streets that are clearly owned by ODOT and versus streets owned by other agencies. So that to me is something that the state legislature should be looking at. And there's a lot of ways to tackle that. I won't speculate on how they do that, but it's definitely hampering our ability to complete that project. And that project's a hard one anyway from ODOT, for ODOT, because it's utilizing our new separated bike and ped design methodology, where we move the bikes off the motor vehicle space and adjacent to the ped space. And so that alone is like earth shattering for ODOT, because it changes everything they do, and it just, they just don't have good design practice or policy on how to do that. And so they're really behind when it comes to those facilities. And you see that at Outer Powell, TBA Highway, Highway 43, 82nd. And so it's just a real, real challenge. They're actually utilizing Highway 43 as basically a test case on how to do that. And implement statewide policy on that. So now I guess all progress is good progress, but it doesn't mean for great outcomes and timely outcomes for our project. So
is this experience that you've been going through with them over the last 6 years, is it having any influence on discussions or the city's position as to whether or not they would want to take over that highway? I mean, has the council approached this topic about, you know, how ridiculous these delays are, and, you know, maybe it'd be in everyone's best interest if we would take that street over, that highway over?
Yeah, at the staff level, we have not, I don't think, had that conversation at the council level, but at the staff level, we have talked to ODOT about that, and their offers of bringing 43 up to standard have been woefully inadequate based on the costs that we're experiencing on this project. And so I think that becomes a real question mark of how you do that, how you do a jurisdictional transfer. You know, when you're in like 82nd and the entire corridor is in one city, it's a lot easier, particularly with the political influence that a city like Portland carries at the state legislature.
Yeah.
I mean, we have one rep at the state legislature. City of Portland has like 30 reps at the state legislature, right? So they have a much larger voice than we have. And so I think it's easier, quite honestly, for them to make that kind of negotiation. Policy wise on a statewide level, particularly for small communities like West Lynn, to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense the way ODOT's approaching it with jurisdictional transfers. I think to see real change, you need to see legislative action. And most likely that legislative action would only be from the state to the counties. And then that makes those routes more local. And then the counties could have the conversations with the cities. Because our ability to communicate with Clackamas County is much better than our ability to communicate with state DOT.
Yeah.
I mean, they're based out of Salem, they're not based out of Portland, you know, they have different levels and layers. It's just very difficult at statewide level. So, but that project is still active. I mean, I was just working on it today. And I'm actually sharing our cost bid tabs with ODOT on our project because they keep estimating really high and I keep trying to get them to estimate closer to where we need the project to be. They get into this vicious chicken and the egg cycle where they estimate really high and then they want to reduce scope because they're afraid of cost being too high. And then they take a year, 2 years to reduce scope. And then they're battling against inflation. And then the estimates come in high again 2 years later. And then they're trying to reduce scope again. And it just becomes a very terrible cycle of bad outcomes. But it's very frustrating. But it is something that's in the works. Other capital projects.
One question before you go. Does ODOT carry a bigger contingency component in their project estimates than
yes.
what you would normally is that what
on all aspects
their, on all aspects.
So like
so that inflates their numbers.
Yes. So they'll carry bigger contingencies to not go over their budget. The way the state program works. They also carry much higher engineering costs. So their construction engineering of having inspectors and engineers overseeing the project, they're like my engineering construction inspection is typically closer to, you know, usually less than 15%, more closer to 10% because we're very tight on how we handle that and judicious with how we spend money. ODOT automatically assumes 30% plus on engineering construction. So just staffing the project is at least double, if not more than double than what it costs us to staff the exact same project. So as I'm saying, you don't want projects done at a federal or state level. You really want them done at a local level. You want the finance at the federal and state level, but you really don't want project decision-making at that level, you know, and anybody that's been involved in engineering or, you know, grants, I'm sure is acutely aware of that problem. other projects,
just before you, just two quick questions on the 10th Street project, make sure I understood you correctly. So, you said that, I thought you said that the, there's going to be a multi-use trail or something going up Salomo Road. So it is not going to be a sidewalk then?
No, to fit within the confines, you know, we have the slope and the guardrail on the one side and the steep slope on that side. And then we have
Savannah Oaks
on the other side,
right?
Trying to minimize impacts to the park and the steep slope coming up on Savannah Oaks side. We're consolidating that and building a say 10-foot wide multi-use trail that will parallel the road, have curb gutter, landscape separation between the road and all of the multi-use trails. So both bikes and pedestrians would use the multi-use trail to go up or down that corridor. And then once they get up to Barrington, they would branch off to the separate bike lane or sidewalk. And then same thing when they get down 10th Street. The future phase is to have at 10th Street, the next phase of 10th through the interchange is, and including the traffic signals, is to separate bikes and beds through that corridor. So we'll be building all that separated infrastructure from 8th Court, William Falls Drive to match downtown area. And, you know, we're not anticipating, you know, there's really no destinations, obviously, on the guardrail side. So we thought it best to parallel the park side, sure, then people can have access to the park.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing.
Okay, and then the second thing on that is, I heard you say that as part of that project, they'll also be doing an overlay on Salamo Road.
Yes.
Good.
So.
It desperately needs it.
Yeah, so we'll be doing pavement maintenance there.
Okay.
In addition to the drainage improvements and all of that.
Okay.
So the other big project, of course, is next to AD Creek. We're partnering with the school district on that one at Willamette Falls Drive. That project is currently moving forward. I think they're starting work on the water line work in Willamette Falls Drive. They've got land use approval for pretty much everything streetwise, but we did have to go back and get a second land use process for impacts in the park on our park side of the project, where we're rebuilding a little park trail and resloping the slope between the park trail and the street. And that requires a permit for W Water Resource Area Protection, as well as floodplain impacts. And so we're mass balancing the flood impacts and all of that. I think we just got, hopefully we'll get the consultants to address all of planning staff's questions to get a notice of complete submittal. Then planning staff will review that, issue their findings and recommendation. That project can continue to move forward. Most of the road work can actually continue to move forward right now. The contractor's just hoping to get it all done, start everything at once. But the land use process takes a lot of time, so they might start working on the school side of the project first and then transition their way over to our side. I think all these big capital projects that I'm talking about will all be under construction this year. And so that will all be, hopefully all those will be wrapped up by the end of this calendar year. The only final big announcement I have is we did win IT's National Project of the Year Award, if anybody remembers that, for the Main Street project. Quite prestigious award for the city. The only small community to really ever win the award in the history of it. Usually you're seeing places like New York or someplace like that win. So, and it does cover Canada and other places, so it is international. The city of Vancouver, BC won the award, I think, a couple of years ago. ITE's national conference just happens to be in Portland this year, which is Institute of Transportation Engineers and Planners. And they are planning on having a bus tour from the convention center come down and bring people down to Main Street and West Lynn to see the improvements firsthand and ask questions of myself and our consulting team. So even that project alone is generating an economic benefit back to the businesses on Main Street through.
And have all the might settle down finally about the project after all.
I don't know. I mean, there's always stuff that crops up, but yes, I think for the most part, things have settled down. We asked Main Street if the, you know, about bollards and, you know, areas, tripping hazards. They've indicated that they don't see any of the businesses interested in bollards or further delineation than what's already been provided to them. So we were thinking some more decorative or permanent stuff, but no, everything's good. The biggest challenge, I think, for staff now for that project is the holiday lights. That's a tough one. The trees are growing really fast, and we will have to unravel all the lights this year. They're actually growing so fast that Some of the lights are buried into the bark of the tree already, so we'll unravel all those lights, re-strand them. We are having problems with moisture down there with those lighting systems. It's like there's so much moisture down there on that street that from the river and this location, the humidity, it's almost like being on a dock. So, you know, if anybody has any great suggestions on how to handle electrical connections in a dock style environment on the water, please bring those to us, because it is a struggle to keep things from corroding, not having technical glitches on that light show. So, but it is a nice feature, and I think the people really appreciate it. We had a, I'm gonna probably share this with the group. I'll send an email forward to you all that this winter we did have a really great comment from a family who said that they had a daughter with severe phobias, mental health issues, couldn't be around public, and couldn't go into stores, and disability, and they happened to be down there for something else and saw the light show, and it really turned her around and helped bring her out of her shell, and she wanted to come down and visit the stores and restaurants on Main Street, and it really made an impact on their lives. So, you know, those are kinds of things that, you know, make you feel good about that kind of investment, even though it's not a priority investment for the city staff typically. Anything else? Capital updates?
Sounds good. Good report. Any questions, Lance?
I had a question.
Where's that coming from?
If it's from Mary, if other members of the board actually don't have a, I mean, I'd go last, but.
No, go ahead, Mary.
Thanks. I, about the project, Willamette Falls Drive at the park, Fields Ridge Park, is there still a plan to have parking spaces up on the street on Willamette Falls Drive?
Yes, there's parallel parking on Willamette Falls Drive adjacent to the park that's consistent with what's in the adopted Willamette Falls Drive concept plan.
How many spaces, parking spaces?
I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head. I'd have to count them, but basically it runs the length from the roundabout and intersection at the one parking lot driveway entrance to the other parking lot.
Okay. Yeah.
Consistent with where people have historically parked there, I think.
Yeah, extremely unsafely, I will say. And much to their own, you know, hazard and children. So I'm also curious about, with respect to those parking spaces, which I really, really would wish we would get rid of, I'll just say, what about reducing the speed?
Yeah, the speed limits stuff is, I think, all in accordance with what was in the land use case that was in the school's submittal in the traffic impact analysis.
Okay, well, I'm just asking if we can, what is the process to request it be lowered? I guess is the question I'm really asking.
Yeah, lowering goes to ODOT. So I think the school district already has that in their plan. And then of course we have the school zone times where it's lowered to 20 during drop off and pickup hours. On top of that, I can certainly dig through that and find that for you.
So there is a proposal to lower the speed limit already.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's already in the works. Obviously, typically the way that works is we follow what's in the traffic impact analysis in the land use case. Once the improvements are substantially complete, we'll do the analysis that's required by ODOT and get their intake input at that point. They don't really want to do that analysis before projects move forward because they don't know if, you know, like if it's a private development, they never know if the private development's going to move to completion or not. So usually we do that in coordination with ODOT once there's, you know, substantially under construction.
Okay.
And so my guess is speed analysis, speed sign changes, any recommendations would probably be this summer. And then move that through the process and then try and sync that up with the school calendar year when the school comes online.
And is the public invited to participate in that process at all?
Well, it's all, I mean, they've already been in that process. It's already been included in the TIA and in the land use process, but certainly they can add more comments and we can do more outreach on that as we move into construction. Regards to the parking, I mean, that was already included in the land use decision. But if the council wanted to revisit that, that's certainly something to bring up to John's attention. Modifications be good to know before we get the concrete on the ground.
It would. All right. Well, thank you for that. Sorry, I didn't mean to take up too much time. Thank you.
Quick follow up on that.
Good questions.
I thought I had read something that there's legislation pending to transfer the speed limit issued to the local jurisdiction. Local authorities.
They did that for the city of Portland and I think a couple other cities. Oh, and I think that there's some more items in this legislative calendar year to expand that.
Okay.
They're also talking about local streets versus arterial streets. Obviously, this is an arterial street that Mary's talking about. So we'll be watching all of that as well and seeing how that plays out. We would still, even in the stuff that went to Portland, they still had to go through engineering review process and everything. They had to follow the process that ODOT does. They just do it with the local staff and say ODOT.
Yeah. All right. Gotcha. Great. All right. Anything further under the capital project update? All right. Moving on. Board discussions and announcements. Does anyone have any announcements before we take up the topic of the schedule for this year meeting schedule? Any announcements, anything further there? Being none, let's look at these dates here. So the proposed dates for our meetings this year would be in February, April, June, August, and October. I assume those are all the third
Wednesdays.
Wednesday of the month?
Yes.
Third Wednesday of the month. Okay.
The only one that really, I think staff's definitively looking for direction on is the December meeting. Third Wednesday would be in conflict with the holiday in December. So traditionally, we have that meeting between, you know, like first or second week of December, you know, because we also don't want to get in conflict with Thanksgiving.
Right.
So I would ask that everybody look at their schedule. Don't have to make a decision tonight, but if the February through October meetings look good, we can go ahead and put those out and put those on the tentative schedule for the city website. And then for the December meeting, our next meeting, you guys can give me, you know, think about dates that work at that time frame for you all. Then please share those with your chair and myself, and then we'll be happy to try and coordinate that time and get that on everybody's calendar.
So does anyone see any problems with the dates that have been proposed here?
Rich, I mean, I wouldn't change it. I won't be able to make the April meeting. I'll be out of town, but I still wouldn't change it. The rest of them all work for me.
Yeah, yeah, they all look good. And it's consistent with what we have established in the past as our regular meeting time. So really shouldn't be any objections to that. All right, then. Any other matters to be brought up before we adjourn?
Yeah, sorry, new board member question, but the whole tolling issue, does this committee get updates? I know it was a council agenda item recently I read about, but is that something that falls under the purview of this committee, or is it kind of moved to another body at this point? Do we?
Well, we've been briefed on it. I think it's the best I can say. We've been briefed on it, continually updated as things are progressing, but we really don't have a say in the matter. And I suppose if something was brought directly to us regarding that, that the council wanted maybe our feedback on, we would provide it. But beyond that, you know, Lance has been really good about letting us know when there's public comment periods that we can weigh in on as individuals, not necessarily as
right.
Tab committee, but as individuals. But beyond that, no, we really don't have a role in play in that.
Now the
Mary had something to say about that.
Thank you. I would say, and I'm sorry, I don't think I've met you, and I can't even hardly see you because of it.
I'm just a ghost.
No, in the person in blue.
Yeah.
My name's Jeff Krug. I'm a new board member.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I just haven't met you. So, hi. I just was going to say, there has been a bill introduced, and one of the sponsors is Jules Walters, to declare us an emergency to block the tolling. But I just learned about that the other day. In the current session, they're having, but I don't know where it'll go or what the legalities of it is, quite frankly. But what the best thing is that the community members can do, quite frankly, is notify your state legislature, your representatives, and advocate for whatever your concern might be that you're having. Because the fact of the matter is, we don't have a lot of ability to make policy on this. We're just being acted upon.
Right.
And we're trying our best to anticipate the impacts of tolling, but that's been, I mean, honestly, one of the huge questions is we don't even really know what the impacts are going to be. And quite frankly, neither does ODOT. So anyway, we can talk more about it. If you want to, you can call me and we'll have a long discussion about it.
Okay, fair enough. I tried to wade through that new environmental assessment that they put out, and yeah, it's complicated stuff, obviously. But you know, my concern is this: just that we at least have a baseline that we all know what our current situation is in terms of traffic in our community, and then we'll really be able to measure the impacts once we see that. And it seems like it's there, but
the city does have lobbyists at the state legislature. Our city council actually just authorized the city attorney to start weighing in on the environmental tax state or analysis statement, the EA, which is quite lengthy, looking at any legislative or legal way that we can best preserve the interests of the city of West Lynn. Technical staff reviewed documents as well. Like I mentioned earlier, I have concerns about particularly the polling relative to the roundabouts and the existing traffic issues around the Arch Bridge. There's really no way, I think, for them to truly mitigate those issues. And so and even their own models show that they're not going to generate enough revenue to fully fund the cost of the improvements along I-205 from Stafford to the river. So it's quite challenging, I think our lobbyists has indicated to council that, you've got a lot of the downstate representatives that are in Salem that quite honestly just don't want to pay for stuff in Portland Metro.
Yeah.
And you've got a very powerful downstate contingency there. You've got also a very powerful group in the city of Portland itself that is lobbying for funding for the Albina District and I-5 improvements around the Moda Center. And that leaves a very small legislative contingency in the Clackamas County region when it comes to tolling. And so I think our state legislature is doing what it can, and our reps are doing what they can. But everybody's got an uphill battle because nobody wants to pay.
Sure.
I mean, you want to boil it down to simple, nobody wants to pay. Federal and down. Haven't raised a federal gas tax since Clinton. So you just get what you get. At least they can print money. With state and us, we can't print money. So.
Thank you for that.
Sure. All right. Anything further? All right. There being no further business, we stand adjourned. Thank you all. Good lunch. See you at the next meeting.
Everyone, take care.
Good night.